Tomorrow night on ESPN, we start our weekly look back at the greatest games in NBA Finals history, starting with two from the 2016 Finals. LeBron and the Cavs down 3-1 to the Warriors. It's Game 5 at 7 Eastern, followed by the thrilling Game 7. Both games are on ESPN and on the ESPN app. And speaking of thrilling, we've been asking you to send us your videos. Let us know how you're keeping busy athletically during this unique time using the hashtag RiseAndShine. This is Ryan Kenny from Briarcliff Manor, New York. The no-look reverse shot off the trampoline. That's an impressive display from a gentleman who describes himself as a huge fan of Villanova. So I know Jay Wright gets up with us a lot of mornings. Maybe Jay is watching. Coach, you may have yourself a prospect there and a possibility if you're looking for someone to knock down some unusual threes. Anyway, with that thought in mind, we're ready to start another hour. Delighted you have chosen to get up with us here on ESPN. We're going to get through this thing together as sports fans, and we actually have a lot to do this morning. Let me show you the menu for hour number two. It's time to get up with the NFL draft. 3 weeks away, and this morning McShay has his new preview. Five quarterbacks in the mock. He'll tell you where they're headed as he joins us live right now. Then Adam Schefter with an extraordinary interview that tells all of us exactly what has to happen before we see football again. Don't miss it. And Sean Payton tested positive for COVID-19. He's doing much better. He joins us live to talk about that and his team as we get up with you starting right now. And as always, we get up and go to begin. The NCAA Division I Council voting to grant an extra year of eligibility for all student athletes in spring sports who had their seasons canceled due to the pandemic. They'll be able to extend their rosters beyond the current limits. Winter sports such as basketball were not included. Elsewhere, news from the UFC. It appears the highly anticipated matchup between Khabib and Ferguson is once again off. As Khabib confirmed on Instagram Live, he's back home in Russia. He's unable to leave to compete on April 18th because of the pandemic. Meanwhile, the USTA announced that the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, which is in Queens, New York, home of the U.S. Open, is going to be converted into a medical facility starting today. They should have 350 temporary hospital beds and also opportunity for food packaging to take place on site. Golf. Could a second edition of The Match between Mickelson and Tiger be in the works? Phil seems to say yes. He replied to a fan's question on Twitter saying he was, quote, working on it, and then saying he wasn't teasing. So maybe we get another look at these two guys going head-to-head sometime soon. And then NFL owners are expected to vote today on a proposal that would expand the playoffs from 12 to 14 teams starting next season. If it is approved, only one team in each conference would get a bye wild card weekend. That is your get up and go, give you through all the news of the day. Meanwhile, Todd McShay making news with his fourth mock draft. Came out late last night, and here are the quarterbacks. No change at number one. Still Joe Burrow going to the Bengals. That has been the case for a long time, and it seems very unlikely anything is going to change that. Meanwhile, what could significantly change is Tua Tagovailoa. Right now, McShay still has him at 5 to the Dolphins. He's been medically cleared for all football activity following the hip injury he had in November. You heard Laura say that the condition of Tua continues to improve. Meanwhile, McShay has Jordan Love at 6 to the Chargers for the second straight time. Two mock drafts ago, I didn't even have him going in the first round. So this is a guy who was flown up draft boards. The fourth quarterback off the board is Justin Herbert at 9 to the Jaguars. And the last mock, he had him going 13 to the Colts. Colts have since signed Phillip Rivers, and Herbert has moved up. The other quarterback, by the way, is Jacob Eason, who he has going in the second round. In addition to the mock draft, he also released the grades for these players, and the highest-rated player, the only one in Tier 1, is Chase Young, who gets a grade of 95. That is what separates Tier 1 from Tier 2. You can see, if you go down just one point, you got a bunch of guys, including Joe Burrow, Jerry Jeudy, whom he projects to go to the Jets, Jeff Okuda, and then you see Tua just one spot down. So, here is the man himself, Todd McShay, live with us on Get Up. McShay, let's start with Tua to Miami at 5. It's been a topic of a lot of conversation here and other places. How would you assess the likelihood that Miami can stand pat and get him there?
I wouldn't do it if I'm Miami. I've got too many weapons, if you will, in terms of draft picks to be able to just go move up and get him. And if you're not going to get Joe Burrow, which is the player that I'm told by some people in that building there's a lot of love for, if you can't go up and get him, then you got to go get Tua. And so whether it's moving up, I don't know that you can make a deal with Washington, because I think Washington wants to stand pat and take Chase Young, the defensive end. But then you get to 3 and 4 in that range. And I wouldn't wait long. As long as the medical is good And as long as you're comfortable, your doctors are comfortable with what you're getting in terms of his progression from the hip injury and where you project him to be medically, why would you wait? You've got 6 picks in the top 70 overall, 5 in the first 2 rounds, 3 in the first round. Use one or two of those to move up a couple spots to make sure that a team like the Chargers doesn't leapfrog you. Because, yes, Miami has the most picks this year to deal with in terms of that top 70, but teams have next year's picks, and they can use a first and a second from next year to try to go leap ahead of Miami. So I think he's going to wind up going to is in the top 3 to 4 picks. It'll just be interesting to see when Miami's ready to make that decision.
And which place they go to. There's so much there, and I'll bring the guys in it on a minute. I do want to talk about the other quarterbacks here, and by the others, I mean Love and Herbert. They seem to have fallen into that next group here. Jordan Love, I mentioned, 2 mock drafts ago, wasn't even listed. Now you have him going 6 overall. How is this process being the most unusual it's ever been, and the teams can't bring these guys in, and they can't be around them as they normally are? How do you think that winds up impacting him?
I think it actually could hurt him a little bit because there's more to work with off of Herbert. And with Jordan Love, he had this past year with the 17 interceptions and struggles that he had. I think teams would really like to get to know him a little bit better and spend more time with him. But I can also tell you this, teams quietly, let's put it that way, are doing a lot of work behind the scenes on all of these players. And there may be some hotels that are shut off for a third floor, let's say, and teams are setting up shop there where the league doesn't quite know about it. So there's a lot of work going into this evaluation process that isn't official, if you will. But to me, Love is so sudden. He's got potential, but he's not ready yet. He's going to need some time. So he has to go to the right place, as all these guys do. But he really, of these 4 quarterbacks, in my opinion, has the higher upside even than Justin Herbert. But I think he's going to need a little bit more time, and he's going to need the right supporting cast early in his career in order to kind of get over some of the forced mistakes that he made.
Let me bring in some of my crew here that I know have some questions for you as well, McShane. One of them is Dan Orlovsky. You know him well. Go ahead, Dan. What did you want to ask McShane?
Well, I wanted to ask McShay about Joe Burrow because I know that you only elite graded Chase Young, but I want to know how you didn't do that with Joe Burrow, because when I look at Burrow, I go, wait, incredibly instinctual, incredibly reactionary. He's a phenomenal problem solver at the quarterback position. If you watch it, he never misses. Like, there's very rarely misses on his tape. He's always creating stuff for his offense. What did you need to see more to give him an elite grade?
95 is the elite grade. There's like 2 or 3 of them every year. This year I only had 1. He has a 94. Get off my back, Orlovsky, would you?
Come on.
There's the one. Really, the 1 year is, and we're talking about 1 point out of a 100-point grading scale, and you're all over me. But I love it, and I understand what you're saying. If you just look at this year's tape, I agree with you. He's in that elite tier. But he went from a third, fourth rounder a year ago to the second tier in my tier rankings in a 94 grade, which puts him ahead of Tua Tagovailoa and ahead of a lot of elite quarterbacks that have been in the NFL before. So, I love him just as much as you. I just, going through the rankings, he was 1 point off.
And then, Marcus, I want to bring up...
Can I ask you one...
Oh, go ahead, Danny. Go ahead.
I have one more question about Tua. Have you had conversations with teams? I know that teams are looking at Tua and going, okay, the health we have reservations on. Have you had any teams bring up the fact, in the reality of, like, he did not dominate against good competition? Like, have you had conversations with teams that say, you know what, we see Tua and the health doesn't concern us as much as he didn't play great against Georgia. He didn't play great against when teams were as good across the line of scrimmage. Have you had conversations like that about Tua?
Absolutely. And there are some, listen, if you're worried about Tua, that's your second argument. The first argument is the hip injury and the inability going back to high school to stay healthy for a full season. Now, if you're then trying to pound the table and say we want to go in a different direction, that's what you're going to go to. And I agree. I mean, if you really study some of the tape, I think he made some great plays. I think he was great in moments. But he put up those big numbers mostly against average to subpar opponents compared to what he was working with. I mean, he's got four wide receivers that are going to be drafted in the first round, but maybe first two rounds in the next 2 years' draft. He has a really good running back. He has an offensive line that can protect. So he had everything lined up for him. But again, if you really, you know the quarterback position as well as anybody. If you really watch his suddenness, his ability to process, how instinctive he is, and how deadly accurate he is, especially intermediate and down the field, that's what you fall in love with.
And so the question is, if you like him enough at three, do you like him enough to move all the way up to two? And Swagoo, that brings us back to what we were talking about a few moments ago. You sound to me, Marcus, like if you were Washington and you could figure out a way to trade out of that two spot and you were trading essentially Chase Young for Isaiah Simmons, you would do it. I don't want to misquote you, but that you would be comfortable doing that if you could get a bunch of other stuff and still get who you believe is the second best player on the defensive side in this draft.
No question. Last year you drafted Dwayne Haskins. Obviously, Chase Young is dominant. He's going to be a dominant football player. But if you can get two for one and get two really highly productive players, possibly all pro bowl type talents, I think Isaiah Simmons is phenomenal. I watched him from the sideline against LSU, looked at his tape when he was at Clemson, his ability to play on all three levels of the defense. Dabo used him everywhere you could possibly use him in Brent Venables' defense. I wanted to ask Todd, what is the synopsis? Obviously, you have him forward to the New York Giants, but is Isaiah Simmons, what is lacking for him not being an elite talent?
He's still developing. I think his instincts versus the run can continue to get better. He's come a long way the last 2 years. I mean, this guy's a freak. When I sat down and talked to Brent Venables a couple years ago, he's like, dude, you gotta make sure you watch him, and you watch him on tape, and he got better and better and better. He can cover, can play free safety, he can be a too high safety, he can be that overhang covering the tight end and slot guy. So he can do so many different things. And I'll just say this too. Derrick Brown, the defensive tackle from Auburn, the more I study tape, the more I think he's in that elite class. Throw in Jeff Okuda, the corner from Ohio State. So we talk all about these quarterbacks, but I think four of the five or six best players in this entire draft are on the defensive side.
We're 3 weeks from Thursday to the draft, and obviously we'll be covering it for you as we go. And McShay is going to stay with us as we continue. Coming up, before we see NFL superstars on the field again, there are certain things that have to happen. Adam Schefter knows what they are, and you will hear them coming up in just a moment. And then after that, Sean Payton tested positive for COVID-19. He's doing much better. He will join us live to talk about that and his team as we continue this hour. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like animal control when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Back on Get Up. And you know what? 19 years ago today was a special day for our beloved Jay Williams. Meeting for the fourth time that season in the Final Four, Williams and Duke rallied from as many as 22 points down to stun then ACC rival Maryland, winning by 11. Jay Will had 23 points and 4 assists. Duke would then go on to beat Arizona two nights later to win the national championship. So Jay Will celebrating, we hope, 19 years later. You know who didn't like that game was Scott Van Pelt. Tonight, Scott will reveal the winner of our college basketball greatest player bracket in his SportsCenter at 11 Eastern, where you, the fans, have voted and determined the winners of every matchup by going to SportsCenter on Instagram and Twitter to vote. It's our version of March Madness. It wraps up with the Terp, Scott Van Pelt, tonight on ESPN. All right, back to the NFL. The owner of the Atlanta Falcons is Arthur Blank, and he had some very interesting comments about the upcoming season and when it would begin and if it will begin. He said this to Football Morning in America. If I had to speculate now, and I use the word speculate because that's really all it is, I would say yes. I could easily see camps being shorter, players being tested on a daily basis, things of that nature, no fan attendance. We may have fewer preseason games, which probably wouldn't be the end of the world. But I think by September, my hope is by the time the regular season starts, that we'll be able to bring people together in some form or fashion in a safe manner and play. And I'm going to bring Adam Schefter into the conversation here. But first, I want to play you a little bit from his latest podcast. He had as a guest the medical director of the NFL Players Association, a gentleman named Tom Mayer. And it's a fascinating conversation. And Dr. Mayer shared insight into how the league is coping with the COVID-19 virus. Here's some of what he said.
All by way of saying that just based on a four-month run and the idea that in all likelihood, May, June would be the earliest that anything could get open, then you're probably looking at training camp as being a likely starting point. Now, if it happens earlier, great. So I think you're correct that training camp is probably the earliest. Does that mean that we've just given up on anything but training camp? No, but that's what disaster medicine is scenario planning.
As we bring Shefty in, I think most football fans are aware that these mini camps are a huge part of team building and all sorts of other things, particularly for teams with new coaches and more. Those feel unlikely to take place this year, although, as you heard the doctor say there, he's not ruling them out. Shefty, what other important things should folks know about the conversation that you had?
Look, Greeny, everybody is looking for concrete answers at a time when, frankly, there are none. And so we are continuing to grapple with something that we've never had to deal with before. And so as it pertains to football, you want to know, are we going to have an offseason program? Well, we're close enough to say that's not going to happen. Unofficially, the NFL has not called it off yet, but we're not going to see teams go through organized team activities, which takes us to the next point, training camp. And Dr. Tom Mayer, the medical director of the NFLPA, said yesterday that he thinks there will be training camp, doesn't know that there will be training camp, but he thinks there will be training camp at some point in July. What form it will take, we'll see. Will it be short and reduced, no fans in attendance? We'll see. Will players be tested every day? We'll see. Lots of unknowns there. And then he said, if there is a football season, using the word if. Now, I will say, he's optimistic that there will be a football season, but the fact that he could even ask that question at this point in time makes all of us wonder, is there an answer to that question? And right now, there's not. They're hopeful, and I think everybody's watching to see what unfolds in the other countries that are dealing with this and where they go with their sports leagues and businesses and how they operate to try to seek some guidance here to know that we will have football. Again, Dr. Tom Mayer, optimistic we will, but can't say that he knows that we will at this point in time.
This sounds like basically all options remain on the table, and that makes sense for now, and the schedule is where it is, and those things can all be changed. These are extraordinary circumstances. And by the way, the interview was really interesting. I strongly recommend Shefty's podcast if you're interested in any of these issues. Shefty, thank you. Let me bring the guys back in here. Marcus, as you listen to this conversation and you contemplate the idea of these NFL teams not getting their rookies on the field or anybody on the field until training camp at the earliest, how do you think that impacts teams as they get ready for the season? Who do you think it impacts the most?
Well, I think conventionally it impacts the younger tier teams and guys that are being drafted to play major roles in this year's upcoming draft. I focus a lot on the offseason, man. The offseason is the time you kind of build your team. Obviously, everybody thinks this is just a magic puzzle that comes together during training camp. Then you get into the season. If you're good, a lot of the work, a lot of the grind, especially a lot of the figuring out who the guys are that you'll be able to look to when the season gets rough, because there will be adversity to hit. Who can you count on? And you do a lot of that in the offseason, man, with the conditioning, the working out, the being in the building when it's not mandatory. A lot of guys are kind of coming to the forefront, per se, and stepping into leadership roles that possibly you didn't know about leading into the season when you didn't have a veteran-laden team. And then, obviously, for these rookies that's going to try to go in and make an impact. I know OTAs and minicamp were very instrumental for myself, DeMarcus Ware, Kevin Burnett, Chris Candy. When Bill Parcells drafted us, he was expecting us to play right away. And I know OTAs and minicamp helped us tremendously in our rookie seasons be able to step in and play significant roles for the Cowboys on defense. So for guys that are being looked to be day one starters, get ingrained into the NFL, this is going to be a huge learning curve with so much time missed.
Chef Tim, told you have something else. What do you got?
Well, Greer, think about this. Again, a team like the Philadelphia Eagles is going on its fifth straight year with Doug Peterson as the head coach. You look at the rest of the teams in that division, the Cowboys, Redskins, Giants, they have all changed their coaching staffs. That is a huge advantage for the Philadelphia Eagles in an offseason where those other teams would be eligible to begin offseason programs starting Monday. They can't do that. There's not going to be an offseason program this year. And so the Eagles have a major advantage in that division. And I'll give you one other curveball that's related to this, but not in the same category. We've seen free agents familiar with coaches sign certain places. They've wanted to go with players that they wanted to sign. The other free agents, people have raised this question. It hasn't come up much, but we may see this as the draft unfolds. A lot of these free agent deals that have been entered into, the agreements, they haven't been signed. What's to stop a team from drafting a player it didn't expect to be available at a certain spot and then rescinding the offer to the free agent that it made because it hasn't taken a physical and a signed contract? We may see a little chaos. This is all still playing out right now. It's going to go in ways that we don't expect. There's a lot of tentacles to this that we still have to see how they develop and play out.
Wow. And then, Danny, one other thing I want to ask you quickly here. And a guy who is the opposite of a rookie is Tom Brady, obviously, with 20 years of experience, but coming to a new team. How do you think it impacts his ability to get up and running quickly with Tampa?
Yeah, I don't think it'll have any negative impact on Tom Brady. I think he'll do three things. He'll talk to their strength coach and make sure everybody on that football team understands what the expectation is. He'll talk to Bruce Arians and figure out how he wants to run the football team. And Tom Brady will become the head coach in meetings using technology. And then he'll talk to Byron Leftwich and do all their installation. Tom Brady will become the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers using technology, whatever ways necessary to make sure that team hits training camp running.
All right, there's so much more here to get to, and we will as we continue. But I have to pause because Sean Payton is ready to go. Sean Payton, head coach, New Orleans Saints, recovering from COVID-19. We'll ask him how he's doing and what his plans are for one of the most intriguing players in the league. Don't miss him next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and Sean Payton of the New Orleans Saints to date is the only NFL head coach known to have tested positive for the coronavirus. Thankfully, Payton, who first started experiencing symptoms on March 15th, announced last Wednesday that he has been cleared. And I think I speak for everyone, football fans and beyond, who say it is delightful to see Sean Payton, who joins us now live, looking so well and hearing that he's feeling so well. So, Sean, first and foremost, thank you for doing this. And how are you feeling?
Good, Mike. I appreciate you having me on. I'm feeling well. Fortunately, I was one of the, I guess you'd say, majority that had it and yet didn't have any of the respiratory maybe symptoms that we're seeing so often with this virus. For me, it was just the chills. I had one day of a fever. It was that first day that I went ahead and got tested. It took a while to get the results back. I think it was 4 days later. But I would say very shortly after that Thursday, when I got the results back, I was asymptomatic and began to feel just tired, but pretty much like I had recovered, and it's been 2 weeks now, so a little bit over 2 weeks. And still, like everyone else, still staying inside and distancing ourselves from our neighbor per se. It's you know, quite a difficult period of time, and I say that obviously for so many different regions and so many different people, you know, in our country.
No question. And look, your health is a private matter, but you're such a famous person. This is a matter of such interest. So we really are grateful to you for being willing to share that much. Let's talk about some football here, because we're delighted to have a chance to do that. So looking at your team, Drew Brees signs a 2-year deal. Taysom Hill is coming back. Teddy Bridgewater is in Carolina. So a very busy offseason in the quarterback room. And we've been talking a lot about it here. What role do you envision Taysom Hill playing for your team this year?
Yeah, I think the role is pretty clear. And first and foremost, we still view him as a quarterback. And we spent a lot of time this offseason discussing, you know, our vision for him this season at quarterback, but then also at the F position. And what I mean by that, Mike, you know, it's that slash tight end receiver. He's a tremendous blocker. He's physical. I don't think people realize how fast he is. He's probably one of the three or four fastest guys on our team. So he'll play that F position. He'll certainly be involved in the kicking game. It's one of the things that he takes pride in and is very good at. And then the unique situation with our team and with our quarterback, Drew Brees, is he's announced he's coming back for his final season. I think Taysom sees himself as being a starting quarterback in this league, and we do too. Now, because of what we choose to do with him on game day, we have to carry a third quarterback just based on the nature of the amount of plays he's playing. At any given time, if something were to happen to his throwing hand, then all of a sudden you're really down to your starting quarterback. So we'll have a third quarterback that'll be up each game.
You know, the two words that get used a lot in the NBA and generally never get used in the NFL are load management, but we've raised them here a little. And the notion that Brees, who of course is as at his advanced age, perhaps a week or two here or there, scheduled in advance, might be something that benefited him enormously. And you have the unique luxury of having a guy like Taysom Hill. So when I say the words load management in football, what is your reaction?
No, we practice load management. It's a term that we use, and I would say it applies a lot for us during training camp when we're, you know, stacking practices, let's say 6-7 days in a row before a break. We discuss it during the week preparation for each game. So there's certainly veteran players that we feel like are players with injury history that we're going to be smart with. And then when you deal with Drew Brees, you know, typically his Wednesday schedule now, which is the first day in our league to practice, it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. He's not going to throw, and he's going to be really judicious as to what he does on Wednesday and then ramp things up that Thursday. So Taysom, a lot of our players, especially the more and more we've been able to research just the length of the season.
So you're talking about time during practice. I guess what we'd be talking about here is the notion of actually having a week off during the season. NBA players will take games off. This is clearly not something that happens in the NFL generally. Is that what do you think of that? Just the very notion of it as being something that could happen as we see these older quarterbacks like Brady and yours.
Listen, it's a great question because we're getting into these waters that no one's been before. I mean, you know, when you're looking at what Tom's getting ready to do now, and he's moving to Tampa Bay and where Drew's at, I mean, these guys are in their 40s. I think, look, last season, Drew missed 5 weeks because of a thumb injury. That certainly wasn't planned. And we would have liked, and I'm sure he would have liked to have stayed healthy. But I do think the topic that you're discussing relative to players like Drew or players like a Tom Brady is something that I think is has a lot of merit to talking about. And then there's a few others that occasionally you'll come across a veteran player that you're just trying to take a game off of them, a week off of them. I understand completely the question. And I think that's something that we've not had as much experience with.
Yeah. Okay. Good. I mean, that's a, you know, candidly, you seem more open to it than most of my analysts here yell at me every time I bring it up. So that, I think that went better than I was expecting it to.
Because no, they, I think that Mike, listen, the end game is to win as many games as possible. And we feel like we're competitive and we feel like we've got talented players and we've seen experienced coaches do this. And we've seen the NBA find the experienced team. You know, I think San Antonio was one of the first teams we started seeing that happen with when they had a certain road stretch. They were trying to figure out how to win most of the games as opposed to naively going into every one of them and then maybe down the road not being better for it.
All right, you mentioned Tom Brady. He's in your division now. What was your reaction to that?
I don't know that it was that surprising. A lot of times you're kind of behind the scenes in the know relative to where a player like him is going. He's someone that we got great respect for, and obviously he's gonna change the bar there. That's the one thing. It's the one player that travels somewhere, and it's not, man, we've got to face this really talented player, and that's something that you have to obviously deal with. The thing that is most troubling is you just know he's going to raise the bar relative to how that team then performs. And we were on a text not too long ago, and I finished my text back to him with hashtag keep the cannons quiet. And he kind of chuckled and I think that's the one thing he'll bring in such a unique way is his competitive fire. All those things that'll elevate the play of the whole organization.
Sean, I want to ask you about a conversation we just had with Adam Schefter, who had the medical expert from the NFLPA on his podcast yesterday. The idea being that, even optimistically speaking, it seems the first time that there's any real chance you will have your players on the field would be training camp. All of the OTAs and things like that that typically happen in the spring will almost certainly not happen. So let's say that is when you are able to get on the field, late July for the first time. As a coach, what impact do you expect that to have on your players and on your team?
All right, so twofold, Mike. I think we experienced that in 2011. In 2011, if you recall, was the lockout season where we had our draft. We sent the paperwork out. Players had the playbook, but it wasn't until training camp that we got started. Look, I think universally for 32 teams, obviously that impacts each team a little differently. I think it's more difficult for the teams with new coaches. I think it's more difficult for the teams that have had a greater amount of player turnover. I think it, to some degree, can benefit a team like ourselves that's experienced, same coaching staff, a lot of the roster intact. It puts a little bit more stress on the new programs. And yet, right now, and that question's been raised, it seems like just as we follow news daily, which is so hard to do now because it's dramatically changing each day, for me and for us to kind of project where we're at come July and August, it seems like that's 2 years from now. But I would agree with what you just said. I think that's a realistic, at least for today, a realistic goal. You know, that might involve teams being able to send playbooks to their players and a handful of other things, training material, workout schedules, all of that. But I think realistically and optimistically, really, that would be a goal.
One last thing, Sean. I so appreciate this time. And at the risk of being overly dramatic, your team has been knocked out of the playoffs in heartbreaking fashion 3 straight years. And I just wonder, has this experience that you've been through and that we're all going through changed your perspective in any way on what all of that means?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, Mike, you've been around long enough. I was with the Giants. We had just played Monday Night Football at Denver. It was the opening of Denver's brand new stadium. And that was September 10th. We flew back during the night, landed in the morning at Newark. Our plane pulled up right next to the plane that was going to go down in Pittsburgh later that morning. And I remember being at Giants Stadium, when the planes went into the Twin Towers, and experiencing 9/11 as a league, as a team, though, 2 miles away, maybe as the crow flies across the Hudson River, and immediately just wanting to be with your family, make sure everyone's safe. And, you know, that was a time. And again, I'm not making a comparison, but it was every once in a while, a moment like that, that really kind of allows you to step back and say, hey, what we do and for a living and it pales in comparison to human life and what we're experiencing globally right now. So yeah. And yet, I think that those tough defeats in the postseason also develop a little bit of toughness and grit. And, I like the team we have because look, each of those seasons following, you know, the tough loss of Minnesota, that was a great play towards the end of the game they make. There was a lot said, how are they going to recover the next year and bounce back? And then sure enough, we're right there, a minute and a half left in the game, getting ready to go to a Super Bowl. And we experienced a difficult, obviously a poor call. Nonetheless, that's going to be the game that's going to really be the backbreaker for this team. How are they going to recover from that? And then last year, we're back in the postseason and certainly didn't play our best game, and yet we're in a position to win. So there is a toughness element to this team. I like this team a lot. I like the competitive nature of this team. And so, you know, when the time is right, we'll look forward to being back and competing. And yet right now, I was on Twitter the other day, and we were putting some plays up, and I think it was an Atlanta Falcon fan who made a comment, and I just tweeted back to him. And we seem to, as a country, and we do this very well, understand and come together very quickly and put things like a rivalry game or some of the smaller things aside and really focus on what's important right now. And still we're focusing on, man, slowing this down and understanding what it means to really even out the lump. And because our healthcare workers, our doctors and nurses, everyone right now, those people are on the front lines. And then having to go home to their loved ones. And that's something very challenging. Our team doctor lost his father yesterday. This is something that's touching everyone.
Sean, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you doing this. And again, I speak for football fans and beyond when I say we are delighted to see you well, and we look forward to seeing you again. Thanks very much for this today.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate what you do.
Take care. That's Sean Payton with us, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. I'm being told literally this second in my ear that Brian Windhorst, NBA insider, has breaking news. He will join us with that next. We'll take a short break and be back with him in a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
There may be no games,
no practices,
no high fives,
but we're all still part of a team,
and we all have a role to play.
Right now, that means keeping our distance,
but still checking on each other,
helping the most vulnerable,
and supporting our heroes
that are keeping us safe.
Sports may be paused,
but the best parts
are needed now more than ever.
So let's all do our part to help our team
right now.
We are back on Get Up, and we have breaking news into our newsroom, and it comes from our NBA insider, Brian Windhorst. Windy, what can you tell us?
Yeah, Greeny, I wish I had better news, and I wish I wasn't always coming on and talking about Chinese basketball, but the Chinese government, the association of sport over there that governs all sports in the country, has issued an order this morning basically restricting team sports going forward. And this is a blow to the pro basketball's restart there. They'd already delayed it last week, and now it's delayed indefinitely. From what I understand, there's just major concern about asymptomatic carriers of the virus. And so the idea that the Chinese Basketball League was going to return very shortly in two different cities with 10 teams playing, the type of format that I and other people envision for the NBA, is now put on hold officially by the government. And we've had, for the last 2 weeks, after a lot of optimism, we've had a series of setbacks in Asia, where they've had success in tramping down the new cases of the virus. And so it's disappointing, for sure, especially as we look to the future of the NBA and pro sports here. There's leagues across the world that are watching the Chinese and how they handle this, because they are ahead of everybody in dealing with this virus. Now, the CBA is telling their players today, after this order came, it was a private order. It was not issued publicly, but obviously it became known within the league quickly. They were telling them that they're still going to play, to stick with them. There's more than 20 foreign players, more than a dozen Americans who have come back and are in quarantine right now. They say, hold tight, we're still going to play. But one of the things, Greeny, is that the Chinese are aware that all of these eyes are on them. And the last thing that they want is to restart the league, have something set them back, and really do more damage. So the Chinese are being cautious, but we're now looking at probably more than 4 months before they can restart their league after shutting down in January.
Yeah, that's the timeline here. And Wendy has been so in front of this for us and for all of us at ESPN through this entire process. I'll keep saying it. We don't know what's going to happen, but we can tell you what has happened. China is now at 4 months and counting before they will even begin the process of coming back. And interesting, one of the players we're talking about here that everyone here knows is Stephon Marbury, who just taped an interview with Rachel Nichols last night talking about the preparations he was going through to get ready. So they were on the verge of doing this and called it off quite suddenly, from what I can tell.
Yeah, and like American players like Jeremy Lin and Lance Stephenson flew from home here in the U.S. over to China and entered a 14-day quarantine because they thought at the end of it they were going to join their teams for practice and they begin to play. And I think what it just shows is what the challenges are going to be for us, you know, if and when, as a country, we get past the worst of it and can think about this. And that's the issue. The Chinese have testing. They have supplies. They're sending their supplies to us now because we're on the short end of it. They have what they need, and yet they are still tentative about this. And the huge thing over there in China, and I can't emphasize this enough, they don't have a players association. So anything that happens with the league and the players, they can just dictate it. They don't have that extra layer of a stumbling block. Like, they can just say to their players, hey, listen, you want to play in the league, you want to get paid your contract, report to this city, and you're going to be quarantined, and you're going to be away from your families for a month while we finish this season. If you don't like that, you can leave the league. In the NBA, you don't have that. You'd have to come to an agreement with the players just to have this concept anyway. So this really comes back to testing and concern. And the Chinese are just not there yet. And, we don't know, Greeny, where we're going to be in 2 or 3 months. We may have testing. We may have the ability very quickly to determine whether somebody is sick or not, whether they're asymptomatic or not, within hours, within minutes at possible. And that could change the game for all of this. But because they don't have that, or they're not comfortable with that, the asymptomatic cases are a real concern. They don't want players to get together, play, and then another outbreak to happen.
All right, so again, I would describe this news, as you did, as disappointing. It appeared the Chinese Basketball League was on the verge of return. That has now been indefinitely suspended. Brian Windhorst, thank you very much. It's outstanding work, as always. And we'll take a short break here. A reminder that First Take follows us every morning, so they're 7 minutes away. They'll answer the question, could the Patriots actually be better next year without their longtime former quarterback? There's no way either of those guys thinks that. Could they? You'll find out when they start, top of the hour, right here on ESPN. Get Up is brought to you by Edward Jones. It's time for investing to feel individual. All right, our top story this morning was Todd McShay's most recent mock draft, which he released last night, and you see the top 10 picks on his board there, with Joe Burrow still going at number 1, and Tua Tagovailoa going at number 5 to Miami. Jordan Love, another quarterback, is in at 6, and Justin Herbert. So 4 quarterbacks in the top 9 picks, and you see the rest on your screen. I've got just about a minute and a half left here in our program because of our breaking news here. So Dan Orlovsky, I'll give you a couple of those seconds. What was your number one takeaway from what we talked about with McShay today?
Yeah, probably the fact that there's teams with Tua Tagovailoa that are wrestling two things. There's teams that aren't necessarily overly concerned with his health, but then they have some questions about the performances in big games when the other team across the line of scrimmage was just as talented. And then there's teams that overlook that and say, well, the health is still an issue for us. So I still think that he is going to be the player that will be talked about the most and would be the most intriguing one leading up to the draft. And if I was a general manager, I would bet on his health and bet on his potential to be my quarterback for the next decade and a half.
Marcus, how about you? What was your number one takeaway?
Obviously, we can get into the trade about trying to trade up and get Tua, but I'm going to go another place, G. I'm intrigued about Justin Herbert and Love and seeing how this thing plays out with Jordan Love going 6 and Herbert being there at 9. I think Todd has him. I wonder if that flips because of the evaluation process that Todd talked about of them not being able to be as hands-on with Jordan Love and go through some of those processes and evaluations. Justin Herbert and Jordan Love, to me, is going to be a very intriguing situation to see who goes in that 6th spot.
Yeah, we had Laura earlier tell us that she thinks that the good news, and good news is the wrong word, but that this unique process might wind up helping Justin Herbert and hurting Jordan Love. Obviously, we have 3.5 weeks to find out, and then we just had the breaking news from Brian Windhorst about the further delay of the Chinese Basketball Association season. So all of that will be covered as they continue the fun next. We thank you for getting up with us here on Get Up, and we'll see you back in Better Than Ever tomorrow. First Take starts now.